Hi everyone, welcome to episode 309 of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast, presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Hello, Adam.
How's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good, it got cold today.
It did get cold today.
We've got the classic Cleveland, like last night, as I was walking my dogs, it was like 45 or 50 degrees. Woke up this morning, it was like 20. I was like,
yeah, pretty much.
I mean, it makes sense, it's winter, but it was, if we can stop with these wild swings.
Well, the groundhog said spring is coming early.
Well,
so if we believe the rodent in Pennsylvania, but, which is debatable, but yeah. If we believe the rodent in Pennsylvania,
there's no way this winter is ever gonna end.
Oh God, I love that movie.
I know, I haven't watched it yet. I'll probably watch it this year.
Was somewhere on Groundhog's Day and they were playing it. Don't remember where.
Makes sense. It's so good. I love it so much. Remember? It's probably like a top three movie for me. I love it so much.
Good.
It's a really good Bill Murray. Before I talk about what today's interview is, do you want to let people know where they can find us and all that jazz?
Sure. You can visit our website, professionalbooknerds.com. From there, you can get all of our social links. We are on Twitter and Instagram at ProBookNerds. We have a vibrant community where you can come and chat books with us. And you can email us directly at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com.
Yes, you can. So today's episode is an interview I did with Leif Shallcross. She is an Australian author who wrote a book called The Beast's Heart, which is like a Beauty and the Beast retelling from the Beast's point of view. That was the entirety of the pitch part of the email that I read when they asked me if I want to interview her or something. I'm a sucker for a retelling, and I'm a sucker for a retelling of a fairy tale. So it's really good. We had a lot of fun. Some really cool things that we discussed briefly, but I was just talking before we started recording. Jim Dale is doing her audiobook. He, of course, of Harry Potter audiobook.
Incredible.
Fame. Yeah. So she said she's like, when they pitched him because he was interested because he'd read the book or something, she like had a panic attack and was like, yeah, I guess that'd be okay. So, but no, the book is really interesting. She talks about, the book starts before the Beauty and the Beast story that you're used to, and then it also continues on after where like the movie and the traditional story ends. So I do think people really, really like it. It's good stuff. So that is the interview that's today. Is there anything else you think people should know about? I feel like we don't have anything going on for like the first time in months.
I don't think we have anything going on.
Yeah, I don't think so either. We still have, of course, our 2019 Professional Book Nerds Reading Challenge. And if there's librarians listening, I want to let you guys know we're actually having our outreach services team is making some marketing resources for that. So if you guys want to promote it in your library, those will be available shortly.
That's good to know because that is a follow-up to a question I meant to ask you but forgot about.
So we've had a couple of our account managers
send
me messages, be like, hey, do you have any materials for that? And we're like, nope, kind of made it up on the fly. Jill put the PDF together herself.
One came through when I was in Seattle, and I totally did not respond to it. Like, because I was in Seattle, like, I forgot. I didn't, mm-hmm. Ignore it, but I forgot. And I kept meaning to be like, Adam, so-and-so.
Yep. So we're going to make
great.
Those. I mean, those will be made by, like, the middle of February, so there's still plenty of time. As we mentioned, there's only 12 challenges,
correct.
So people can get to them. I believe in you. So as soon as those are up, we'll let everyone know. We'll probably put them on our website and the resource center and all that jazz. And speaking of that, we'll do some challenge suggestions in the near future. I think I said Thursday, but I also think we had something planned for Thursday. You said
I don't know if we've quite figured that out yet.
Yeah, that's not a surprise. We never do. Okay. Anything else?
I don't think so.
All right, cool. I hope you guys enjoy this interview with author Leif Shallcross on the Professional Book Nerds Podcast. Hi, everyone. It's Adam again, and I am incredibly excited to be joined by Leif Shallcross, who is a writer of fairy tales and dark fantasies, whose debut novel, The Beast's Heart, was released internationally in 2018 and comes out this week in the United States. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. We were just talking before we started recording. I'm wondering if people are going to be able to hear it. I can literally hear like the rain and hail going on right now in my office. So I'm hoping it doesn't show up. But you guys are in the middle of your summer right now, correct? Because you're in Australia?
Wait. We are, yes. We had a massive thunderstorm yesterday, though, but it was like one of those big summer thunderstorms. So it's been quite muggy and steamy here.
Yeah, but see, that's the time you're supposed to have it, whereas I feel I'm all off kilter right now with all this, but that's okay. So would you mind kind of getting us started by giving us an introduction to your book? It has a really, really fun idea behind it, and I want you to kind of get to tell that part.
Sure. Okay, so The Beast's Heart is a retelling of the Beauty and the Beast fairy tale, but it's told from the Beast's perspective. I guess in my story, winning Beauty's heart is only the first step for him. It's an important step, but there's other challenges he has to overcome.
So obviously, I feel like if people don't know the story of Beauty and the Beast, they've been living under a rock, so we don't have to dive too much into that. But what was it about Beauty and the Beast that made you want to retell it? Is this a story that you've always loved as a reader?
Yeah, yes, it is. Look, I'm a complete fairy tale tragic. I love fairy tales. But Beauty and the Beast is one that it's a particular favourite, and it's one that I have sort of revisited a few times. I've written a few short stories about it as well, and read plenty of novels about it. And I think one of the things that I just love about it is it's one of the few fairy tales where the protagonists actually get an opportunity to fall in love. Mm-hmm. They don't kind of see each other across the room and that's it. They actually sort of get to know each other and then fall in love properly over a period of time. And that really appeals to me. The other thing I love about Beauty and the Beast is this sort of idea of the Beast's kind of castle being this kind of hidden sort of secret world at the heart of the forest. That I just love that.
Well, and you do some really fun things with the castle and the grounds around it. It's almost like you chose to make that a character in the book itself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I look, my favourite stories are the ones where the story world actually it becomes a character in the story. So, I mean, you know, Harry Potter is a classic example of how well that works. I mean, Hogwarts is a character. Mm-hmm. And one of my favourite stories growing up was the Secret Garden by Frances Hodgkinson, I think. Mm-hmm. And in that, like, you know, the garden itself is this character that kind of changes and transforms over the course of the story. And so yeah, for me, the castle and the gardens were an important character.
I love that it's almost like it's temperamental. Like, they, you know, if the Beast does something or he says something or he's pouting, it's almost like I would just love the idea. Because then, you know, when people think of Beauty and the Beast, they're initially going to think the Disney version, and there's, you know, there's Lumiere, and there's Cogsley, and there's...
Cogsworth.
Right, and, Cogsworth, not Cogsley. Come on, Adam. And you have these kind of unseen versions of all of those characters, but there's also, it feels like the castle in and of itself is, like, pushing the characters together.
Yes, when he you know, sulks or does something that he shouldn't do, that, you know, the castle lets him know that he needs to behave differently.
So what made you want to tell the story from the Beast's perspective?
I guess look, this is the thing that I love about fairy tales, is that there's always a fresh way of looking at them. Mm-hmm. I've read quite a few stories. Beauty and the Beast is usually Beauty's story. It's usually her story. And I've read quite a few versions from her story. And I think one of the things that... bothered me a little bit about the original fairy tale. It's sort of resolved in various different ways in different versions that you read, but one of the things that does bother me about the original fairy tale is this idea that you've got the beast who's done something so awful that some fairy or sorceress or witch has decided the best course of action is to, like, quarantine him mm-hmm. from humanity for, like, 100 years. It's not, he's not, and this, so he's probably done something terrible. It's not, you know, he didn't, you know, pinch a packet of chips or something. Yeah. He's done something terrible, but the story, the resolution of the story revolves around him actually having a redemption arc and kind of coming back from that. But it always seemed to me to be a bit of a conundrum. If he's done something that awful, how could he ultimately, you know, be rehabilitated and end up being a nice guy? So that was one of the things that I really wanted to interrogate. How could you have this person? What kind of person would he have to be able to make that journey? Mm-hmm. I was really fascinated about sort of delving into his perspective and finding out what he thought about the whole thing.
So before we started recording, I told you my wife is a huge Beauty and the Beast fan, and she was the one who was like, when I showed her the copy of your book that I got, she's like, okay, you have to do this interview. And I said, absolutely. And she and I got this big argument, because I have, depending on which version of the fairy tale you read, it's my contention that obviously he treats, you know, the beggar at the beginning very poorly, but I've told her, I was like, he's, you know, protecting his castle. He's trying to, I almost told her it's almost like a Trojan horse sort of a thing, where, like, that person coming in could have been something that ends up being a horrible, horrible situation for them. And like I said, obviously he treats her horrible, but, like, we had this big argument that I am of the belief that while he didn't have the greatest manners or anything, I feel like a bit of an overreaction to just turn him into to do what she did to him.
Look, I think that's fair. But in her defense, in my fairy's defense, she's a fairy. Mm-hmm. And I guess I really like fairies who are just completely mercurial, who you can't kind of tell which way they're going to jump. Mm-hmm. They're really impulsive and totally amoral, and they might be nice to you or they might be nasty. So my fairy's a bit like that. My fairy's a bit like, going to curse you today.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, my wife told me that I'm absolutely wrong. Like, she refused. She wouldn't hear my argument. She refused. So. But you touched on a really good point, though, about fairy tales and the characters in them. Do you think one of the reasons that people continue to love these stories so much is that they are, like, they always teach a lesson of some sort, it seems, but they really are, it kind of flows between good and evil so much. Like, do you think that's one of the reasons that people continue to love them so much?
I think fairy tales are such, and I guess when I'm talking about fairy tales, I'm talking about a particular sort of group of stories that make up sort of a Western storytelling canon. Mm-hmm. So every culture will have their own sort of, you know, mythos and their own sort of canon. But for Western storytelling, fairy tales contain this really sort of powerful set of sort of motifs that, mm-hmm. that we see sort of, you know, used again and again. And I think the really beautiful thing about fairy tales is people are generally pretty familiar with them. So, you know, if you talk about a poisoned apple or a glass of bar, people already, they know what you mean mm-hmm. By that motif of fairy godmother. You know, they know what those things mean in the context of how they affect the characters in a story. And you can, they're so powerful, you can play with them and you can, and they come with a set of expectations that then gives you something to kind of play with mm-hmm. the reader, so you can take those set of expectations and you can fulfill them, or you can upend them, or you can twist them around and create a surprise. So or you can, and so they come with these beautiful layers as well. So you know, I mean, most people will know the story of Beauty and the Beast, and I guess, you know, offering up the Beast's perspective on the story is just a way of, you know, giving the whole kind of Beauty and the Beast, you know, patchwork quilt, you know, just another layer. It's another patch in the quilt. Yeah. So,
well, and like you said, and when people start reading the book, they'll realize that the, you know, Beauty and the Beast falling in love, that's not the end of the story for yours. And I think that is something where when people see these stories that they've resonated, that's resonated with them for so long, Beauty and the Beast obviously being one of the main ones, and really any of the Disney fairy tales, just because of how Disneyfied our entire lives are, I feel like when you see a retelling like that, people are, especially if they love fairy tales, they're inclined to give it a try because they want to see what an author like yourself is going to add to the story. Because, you know, no matter who, you know, I know that no publisher is just going to say, yeah, retell Beauty and the Beast verbatim and then send it out. So
yeah, exactly. That's not fun. We've been there.
So. Although that probably I was gonna say, it probably would still make, you know, sell a bunch of copies, but it is more, I think it really is interesting. It's as a reader, you want to see, okay, how is the author going to play with the structure that I'm familiar with? And what are they going to add to it? I mean, is that what you look for when you're finding retellings to read?
Definitely for fairy tales, it's like, well, I sort of talked before about that idea of, you know, there being a patchwork quilt. Mm-hmm. And I love that metaphor because I think that's how fairy tales work. It's, you know, and it doesn't matter which kind of edge of the quilt you start from, you know, there's so many different ways of looking at stories and different things you can sort of interrogate in the story. But certainly one of the things that I particularly look for in anything that I read is just something that's really immersive, something that I can really lose myself in. And I guess sort of going back to thinking about, you know, why I picked Beauty and the Beast in the first place, why I wanted to write that story was I wanted to lose myself in that fairy tale. So me, initially when I started writing the novel, it was just a really self-indulgent way of just kind of, you know, going and living in a fairy tale for a little while. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then that poses all these sort of story problems that you have to resolve. So
having a story that obviously is, you know, at least the bones of it is so well known to begin with, from a writing kind of the craft of it standpoint, did you feel that was, you know, you needed to kind of keep that skeleton of the story there? Or did, I guess just from like a writing standpoint, how far did you feel you could stray from the story and still consider it a retelling?
I think, the Beast's Heart is pretty close to the, I certainly use the sort of the 18th century versions as my skeleton for this one, and it's reasonably close. It doesn't kind of, there's ways in which it diverts from those early versions, but this one was previously pretty close, and so, for example, I've set it in 17th century France. So when people think about the Beauty and the Beast fairy tale, they often think about 17th or 18th century France as a setting. So I've kept it pretty close in that respect. But as I said, I play with fairy tales a lot in the stories that I write, and that's not, I don't always make that choice when I'm retelling a fairy tale. And I think too, there's a difference between a retelling, and I would probably cast The Beast's Heart more as a retelling of a fairy tale. Whereas you might have another story that's sort of more of a fairy tale themed story, so it's got those familiar themes and sort of motifs, and it might use the very, very kind of barest bones as a structure, but it'll bring in, you know, completely different stuff, or it might set it, you know, in the far future or, you know, whatever. Yeah. You can still have a retelling that, you know, might be a science fiction version as opposed to a historical version, but I think it depends on how much of that skeleton you use and how much of the sort of the trappings you bring in from the original.
Yeah, I think that's like the fine line between a retelling and like a reimagining, I guess you'd think.
Yes.
Like, I think Marissa Meyer's books, like those to me feel reimagining-y, taking the motifs and themes like that. Okay, so when you were younger, what did you discover first from a fairy tale standpoint? Was it the dark, like the Grimm's fairy tales and all those things, or was it the Disney kind of happy ending stuff first? Do you remember?
Definitely for me, I'm pretty sure I've actually was trying to think about this. I can't exactly remember the first fairy tales that I read, but I know that Disney. The Disney fairy tales were ones that kind of came later for me, so they certainly weren't the first versions of the stories that I knew. And certainly, you know, when I was a kid, this is kind of a bit revealing, but when I was a kid, the only Disney sort of fairy tale movies that had been made were Snow White, Cinderella, and Sleeping Beauty. Mm-hmm. So I think Little Mermaid came out when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. I kind of didn't have that whole canon of Disney fairy tales to grow up with. So for me, my earliest sort of experiences of fairy tales would have been versions of the Grimm ones, or maybe some little Golden Book versions, or you know that sort of thing. So and then my mother was I was a very girly girl, but my mother is quite a strong feminist. So there was a sort of a point in my childhood where I think she tried to expand my reading horizons, and then realised very quickly that, you know, I was never letting go of my fairy tales. You know, I was going to hang on to those like grim death. So she actually started buying me a whole lot of sort of, I guess you'd call them sort of feminist, you know, either collections of feminist fairy tales or feminist retellings, or even sort of, you know, stories for kids that were like fairy tales. You know, they had princesses and dragons and curses and you know, gnomes and towers and stuff. But they were contemporary stories, so they weren't traditional fairy tales, and I guess that was, you know, just opened up this whole new world for me, which has actually been really it's so rich. And one of the things I just love so much is that there's this huge kind of body of fairy tales and folk tales that do center, you know, really strong, interesting female characters. Mm-hmm. So that was great. Reading fairy stories was a huge part of sort of my childhood and young adult reading.
So when you're writing these kind of fairy tales now, do you find yourself stepping away from those as a reader, or are you able to kind of compartmentalize the stories that you're reading versus the ones that you're writing? I know some people will read away from their genre while they're writing.
Yeah. Look, my thing is that So, for example, the one that I'm working on at the moment is a Cinderella-themed story. I won't read any Cinderella-themed contemporary novels for the next little while until I feel like I've sort of solidified my story, just because I don't just want to kind of end up reinterpreting somebody else's.
Sure.
But I will go back to original tales and to this whole suite of sort of similar fairy tales to Cinderella. So I might go back and sort of read them for inspiration.
Interesting. And then I think I saw for The Beast's Heart is it Jim Dale who's doing the audiobook?
Yes. Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Okay, because I say, you mentioned Harry Potter earlier, and obviously, I mean, I have Harry Potter tattoos on my arm, so I'm right there with you. But did you know that that was going to be happening, or?
No. when I found out, I was very excited. So basically, my wonderful publisher in the US, so Penguin Random House, said to me, they contacted me just before Christmas actually to say, we're going to be doing an audiobook. So, you know, give us, you know, what are you, how are you thinking, you know, what's your sort of thoughts on the kind of narrator you would like to be? Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, you sort of think about all the, of course you think about all the top shelf narrators first, mm-hmm. but what I did was I sort of went through, I listened to a whole bunch of samples of Penguin Random House audiobooks that had been narrated by blokes, just so I could sort of have a think about the kind of person that I wanted, and, uh-huh. and you know, I sent my producer some sort of thoughts on the kind of person, and she came back and she said, oh, what about Jim Dale? I think he's interested. I was like, I am not going to say no.
Right.
It was a very exciting moment.
I just feel like that would be one of those times you kind of have to try and play it cool, where you're like, you can't say yes right away. You have to be like, yeah, that sounds like that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Tell me about his credentials. What other work has he done?
So he played how many characters in the Harry Potter series? Oh, man.
Yep. So, you know, I thought, you know, as I said, your mind goes to the top shelf readers and you think, oh, he'd be fantastic. And then you go, no, I'm probably, you know, just someone with a British accent would be great, probably.
So have you gotten to hear any clips or anything yet?
No, not yet. I did, again, just before Christmas, I had to, this is hilarious, I had to give them some advice on some French pronunciations of words, mm-hmm. which is, the reason it's hilarious is because I do not speak French, so I had to go and bother my best friend who does speak French and say, Sarah, please help me.
I was actually going to ask that, because there is a lot of, you know, there's not like an overwhelming amount of French in here, but there's enough French where I was wondering.
A little bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was, yes, I'm very, very grateful to my lovely friend Sarah, who did, every now and then I'd be like, how do you say goodbye in French? And she'd give me hearing options, and here's what they mean, and yeah, so. Thank you, Sarah. I love you, Sarah.
Oh, that's so funny. Okay, so towards the end of our interviews, we like to do what we call the Nerd Nine, so just nine kind of lighthearted questions that we ask all of our authors. We used to call these rapid fire, but I get on lots of tangents, and so our listeners would always write in, like, please stop using that term, Adam. It's not what they are. So the first one is, what's the last book you finished reading?
You've got me. It was just before Christmas. Do you know what? I'm not actually sure what the last book was, because I read heaps just before Christmas, but
that's okay.
I did read the second book of Catherine Arden's Winter Night trilogy,
yeah.
Just before Christmas, and loved that. And I think that the third book is just about to come out, so I'm quite excited.
Do you have a favorite place to read?
Couch. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'll read anywhere. Mm. Bus, under my desk at work.
Do you remember the book that made you kind of fall in love with reading as a child?
Do you know what? I think it might have been Enid Blyton's Enchanted Wood. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's the first chapter book my mother ever read to me, mm-hmm. and I was really concerned because it didn't have pictures, and my mother was like, no, just sit down and just listen, and you know, of course, I was probably like, I don't know, like maybe five or something at the time, and mm-hmm. you know, by the end of it, you know, just one more chapter, mummy.
Oh, that's amazing. What's one place you'd like to travel that you have not yet been to?
This is a confession. France. Mm-hmm. I've written this whole book set in France, and I have not been there. Okay. So I would love to go.
Okay. Do you have a favorite holiday to celebrate?
Look, I'm not particularly religious, but I love Christmas mm-hmm. just because, you know, everybody has Christmas off, everybody's relaxed, everybody's chill here, and I love Christmas food, mm-hmm. so, and I guess it's, you know, trying to be a bit non-denominational about it, you know, there's also other holidays that sort of happen around that time of year, so mm-hmm. everybody's generally in a pretty kind of chilled out holiday yeah. kind of frame of mind, so yeah.
Absolutely. Coffee or tea?
Both.
Both
ones? I'm fueled by tea. I have several cups of tea a day, and tea is essential when I'm writing, but I do have, you know, usually at least one just really good cup of coffee a day. Yeah.
I know the answer to this one, but cats or dogs?
Look, I have to say dogs, mm-hmm. just because, yeah. My poor dog would be very disappointed in the other one.
I was going to say, especially since you told me you had to kick him out of the room before we started this, yeah. So I understand.
He's a bit snuffly.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite food?
Look, food in general, honestly. it's one of life's greatest pleasures. Tiramisu is great. Anything with chocolate in is awesome. I'm a huge fan of vegetables, so... roast eggplant. Oh my god.
I yeah. love tiramisu anyway. And vegetables. I was not expecting yep. those two together. and then the last one of these, if you could have dinner with one person alive or dead, who would you pick?
Oh wow. Do you know what? I'm going to be really sentimental and say my dad.
Yeah.
He passed away when I was 18, and I would love to catch up with him again and tell him all about his grandkids and. Yeah. You know, where I'm at in my life, so,
that's
yeah.
a perfect answer. Okay, last question for you before I let you go. What do you hope readers take away from reading The Beast's Heart?
Like I said, I wrote it because I wanted to go and lose myself in a fairy tale. Mm-hmm. So if people who enjoy it because they've, you know, found a book that can create a little world for them that they can just go and live in for a little while they read it, I'll be happy. I'm a happy author.
That's perfect. Liv, thank you so much for joining us today.
That's okay. It was really fun. Lovely to meet you.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can add these titles to their collections and marketplace.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.